From Paul's house and Storm's house, it's Paul and Storm talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes, on average.
I am a robot.
Walk like an Egyptian. I'm Paul.
I'm Storm.
And we're going to talk about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average, today is Tuesday, April 27th, 2010.
Yeah.
That's a cartoon year.
It is a cartoon year.
That's
I expect to see like flying jets and ships going by, going...
Oh, dude, that was pretty cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, like, I remember, like, this is going to date us yet again, but, like, when we were kids, if you wanted to say, like, a kajillion things, you would probably also say, oh, yeah, and in the year 2010, you know?
Right.
When we would all be, I don't know...
40. Electric.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, electric mummy heads or something
like
that.
Well, that's the same diff.
Yeah.
How many minions we got?
306 in the Paul and Storm Brigade of Minions.
Did you add that one we got today?
307.
Yeah.
Another Switchblade Lothario.
Yes.
That's the designation for minions, I guess, 300 to 349.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want in on that sweet, sweet action, you'd better get on it. Go to paulandstorm.com to find out. Oh, and this, did we say this was episode 083?
I did not. I was getting to that, though. This is episode 083.
I thought you might be thinking about possibly saying that.
I was winding up for it.
Yeah, cartoon-like, like a pitcher
yes.
in a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
That's right. My arm was comically windmilling about such that you could not even see it. It was none but a blur or a tornado extending out of my shoulder socket.
But then, upon release, you would freeze and the ball would just inch towards home
That's
plate.
Right. That is right. So I'm going to lead off
sure.
right here off the bat.
Do it.
This weekend is a online charity event being
yeah.
hosted by our good friends Ken Plume and John Widget Robinson. The event is being held on rednosenet.com.
That's a little bit of comedy right there.
It is. It is. There'll be a link on our site to it, but basically it is an American version of the British Red Nose Day celebration, which celebrates a charity. It is run by a charity called Comic Relief, which some of you who grew up and were old enough in the 80s and early 90s to remember when Comic Relief was also an American institution. It's basically the same thing where funny people gather and raise funds for many different good causes. And there is quite a number of causes that Comic Relief donates to. But it is still, it's an ongoing thing over in the UK. That's the UK. I guess it'd be the UK.
The UK. They love it when you say that. Our British friends, you can tell us how much you love being called the UK.
Yes. And our friend Ken, being the Anglophile he is, has kicked off. This is the second year in a row the rednosenet.com event has taken place. It's going to be, he said, looking at the calendar, I think it's Saturday, May 1st through going into Sunday the 2nd, I believe. Boy, but I hope I have those dates right.
But basically, all kinds of amazingly cool and funny people will be like streaming in live, and they'll have prepared things. Maybe some people you know pretty well.
Yeah.
Maybe you listen to their podcast and things like that. Maybe
yes.
they're preparing something.
Here it is. It is, yes. Saturday, May 1st from 12 noon until Sunday, May 2nd at 12 noon. It's a 24-hour event. The reason I bring it up, besides the fact that it is a very good cause, is we can say this much. We have contributed to and helped write a charity single, which is another sort of British institution, so to speak,
The We Are You, the world,
yeah,
kind
like
of thing.
Band-Aid, USA Hand, for Africa. What was the I Ain't
Hands
Gonna
Across
Play
America.
Hands Across America. What was the I Ain't Gonna Play Sun City?
That was the I Ain't Gonna Play Sun City-a-thon.
That's right. But anyway, there is a charity single featuring a great number of awesome, cool, hilarious people, the list of which keeps growing by the day. And it will make its world debut at the RedNoseNet.com event.
Okay.
Well, I remember. I was waiting for applause, but no, I forgot there's no audience.
Well, no, there is an audience. They're just applauding at it. We've warped the space-time continuum with scattered applause.
Yeah.
I was going to say that I remember that was sort of very trendy almost.
Yeah.
To be charitable. And I remember it was high school when it was the big wave of them at first.
Yeah.
And it almost disgusted me. Like, I consider myself to be a charitable person now.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of the contrarian in me was like, oh, screw that. You know, you're just doing that because you want to raise money for the pom-pom squad. Come on.
Yes, that's what it was.
Well, that's the thing. I guess in hindsight, maybe it was a good thing that they were able to harness all of the pettiness and cliquiness of high school kids to do some good for a change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it just annoyed me.
Oh, I see.
At the time.
You're talking about actual high school kids. I thought you were talking about like the stars were just like, you know,
starting things like USA
for Africa just to raise for the quote unquote pom pom squad.
No. They were actually raising money. They often didn't really understand what they were doing.
Yeah.
But you got to hand it to them that their hearts were always in the right place, usually.
Yeah, this is true. Did you ever used to go around your neighborhood with the little orange UNICEF box? I guess it was always in
Halloween.
October or something, yeah.
Yeah, we did.
Do they do that anymore at all?
They do. Every once in a while, we get the can coming around and we scrounge for pennies at Halloween. It's uh-huh. not like just random, hey, I'm Mr. UNICEF and I want money.
Fred UNICEF is at the door.
Yeah, they still do it. I think it's the same thing where they kind of collect for many things.
Yeah.
Very, I don't know, for all I know, it could be, you know, the Evil Chaos Organization.
Yes, the Evil Chaos Organization is collecting can tabs
well,
for dialysis little, machine time.
They've been a little down on their luck lately, so.
Yeah, well, you know, even evil needs a helping hand sometimes.
Wow, that would be a long podcast title, but it's my favorite so far.
It's good so far. So anyway, so to sum up, RedNoseNet.com, this Saturday, the 1st, for 24 hours, the charity single making its world debut there. Trust us, it's awesome.
Well, this has me kind of reminisce-y.
Mm-hmm.
And I warned you that I might be talking about this tonight.
I fully expected and wished that you would.
Okay. Sometimes, as you know, and as y'all out there may know, I like to title the little segments.
Mm-hmm.
This one is either Rosebud or Exploding Out of My Chest. Got to give you a second to try to reconcile the two. Paul, you already know what it is.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, Paul, you know this. My wife and I are getting ready to renovate our garage.
Yes.
And
which is an extra housealer garage. It is a separate building.
It's really more of a car barn.
Yeah.
Like, our house is literally 100 years old. And I mean literally as in the grammatically correct sense. It is 100 years old.
Yes.
And the garage is not much younger than that. A detached garage, which we've never been able to use in the almost 10 years that we've lived here, and decided, what the heck,
it has been dilapidated.
Oh, yes. Not condemned, but dilapidated. And there are so few occasions to really use that word.
Yep.
Dilapidated. Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, it's fun to say.
Dilapidated. Okay. So that's happening. And in the process, we've hired a contractor because we're not dumb anymore and think we can build anything without hurting ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Or others.
Or others who are not ourselves.
Or the cats.
Well, we'll see. We're at, this is the cats are actually a big motivation for the project, not the garage so much, but we're also screening in the back porch.
Right.
Which is very exciting.
Yeah, sure.
They don't know it yet, but their lives are about to become a carnival for felines.
It really is. It's gonna be like, what's it gonna be like? It's gonna be a little bit, I think, like the old Disney World 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea ride. Like, they'll get just enough of a taste of this world that they can't survive in.
I think,
but just enough to sort of observe and see while safely ensconced.
Gotcha. That's true. They do like to watch the wildlife.
Yeah.
Now, I was going to say it's going to be like Homer in the Land of Chocolate.
That too.
We're going to put a little chocolate pig out there and just see what happens.
Yeah.
So anyway.
So you got a contractor, and yep, you're screening the porch, garage, dilapidated.
Right. So over the years.
Car barn.
So in our car barn, which is like the opposite of the word dilapidated.
Yeah.
It's gathered a lot of shit over the years. You know, the random stuff.
Yeah.
The grass cedar that you never used.
Yeah.
The spare lumber that you said, oh, I'll make shelves someday.
Yep.
Several mattresses, a motorcycle, which I really wish I had kept in repair.
Uh-huh. And to mention the four hobos.
Well, they come and go and the number fluctuates.
Yeah.
But it is a car barn for hobos, yes.
Car barn for hobos is now the front runner for the name of this podcast.
Rock. But the important thing to this story is an object that was near the back, underneath the part where the roof had actually rotted through. And it is a footlocker that I have had since, I guess, I was probably a tween, not even a teenager. Maybe even in single digits. I honestly don't remember. And over the years, it was a repository of just the things that were cool to you or to me when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we didn't have any other place to put it, and it just ended up in the garage. And I don't know what I was thinking. More likely, I just wasn't.
Yeah.
But thinking that somehow, magically, because it was in this, you know, Sears Roebuck footlocker, that it would act as some kind of time capsule.
That's right.
And preserve the contents within.
Mm-hmm. Well, because after all, they during the Civil War, when they were trying to protect the physical copies of the Declaration of Independence and Constitution in Washington from worrying about sacking by the South. And then also previously in the War of 1812, they would put the documents inside a Sears Roebuck footlocker.
That's correct. Nicolas Cage. That is where they cut that scene.
Yes.
But in National Treasure Part Stupid, they used a footlocker from the cut scene. Yes. So I unearthed it today, and I opened it. I knew in my heart of hearts what I was going to find, because it was entirely filled with books and magazines and some other ephemera. And I opened it, and when I looked, it was just this greasy, moldy mass. It was like a Cronenberg flick.
All hail the new flesh.
Yeah, just like it had all merged into one giant mad cracked games, electronic games, magazine, trains thing. And I guess the thing that broke my heart the most, because it would have been better if I couldn't tell what the things were at all.
Yeah.
But when I saw these video game strategy guides from the original arcade days.
Yep.
And I didn't even need the guides. You know, the games weren't so complicated that you needed to be told, you know, shoot the invader that's coming down from space.
Right. Hide behind your little shield thingy.
Right. Here's a strategy tip. Hide behind the shield and run out and shoot and then go back.
Here's another strategy tip. Shoot the aliens.
Right. Here's another tip. Don't look for the Pac-Man in Space Invaders. That one will get you far, kid. But I remember going to the bookstore, which of course was the shitty mall bookstore,
right,
before they had Borders and such,
mm-hmm,
just like trawling like a shark or a whale for krill. Like any video game book that came out, I would just buy it, no matter what it was.
You just go run through the bookshelves and come out with a whole bunch of video game books stuck in your teeth.
Yes, because I had my my bone ridge that I could use to filter them out.
Your baleen.
My baleen.
is that what that's called? I know there's a baleen whale. Is that in fact the baleen?
Yeah, I think so. If it's not, it's got to be. It's got to be baleen. And same bookstore where I got my first gem dice for Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah, like they could have been making up video games. You know, oh yeah, here's a guide for Spoon Flinger. Yeah, you'll want to buy this one for sure.
Spoon Flinger.
Actually,
Face
I dare.
there,
it's a two-parter. I dare one of you out there who actually can like do stuff in Flash or whatnot to make the Spoon Flinger game.
That would
do
be
it.
Awesome.
Do it. We will.
We'd be your best friend.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the only things to survive to the point where if I dry them out a little bit, I might keep them. And it's sad because these are not the things that I would have selected to survive.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, my baseball cards were not in there. I had the presence of mind not to put them in the footlocker in the moldy garage.
Yeah.
They were a patch that I got from a particularly good three-game series of bowling.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what the score was?
Well, it wasn't a score. It was the patch was for a 450 series,
okay,
which means over
right,
three games.
Right. That's what I meant.
Though I'm sure I exceeded it by quite a bit.
Yeah. Because you were awesome.
Well, there was a while that I thought about getting good enough to go pro.
Hey, there you go.
Really. And I don't know. I didn't know Chris Hardwick and that his dad was a pro bowler or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he may have communicated to me through the space-time continuum.
He may well have.
And said, don't do it.
Yep.
So there was that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Polaroid picture of, I don't think I'm even in the picture, but it's from the end of the season of like my Little League baseball. And it's ironic that two of the objects that would survive would be sports related.
Uh-huh.
Because I was not athletic. I mean, that the first one was bowling is a little bit of a tip. But yeah, it's from the local pizza parlor. And the third item, I'm actually kind of eager for it to dry out to look through, is a guide to Universal Studios from 1980.
See, I love that.
Yeah, that's the one.
You know what? That's from the Battlestar Galactica era.
Yes, it is. In fact, when we went that year, and my you may know this from previous podcasts, my mom is from L.A., so we would go and visit my grandma out there every few years. And indeed, I was so stoked because I loved Battlestar Galactica so much. And at the age of, I guess, 9, it's still real to
mm-hmm,
you,
mm-hmm,
at least to a good enough degree that if you're walking along in Universal Studios and a Cylon walks up with its swishing red eye, and it wasn't like the hot Cylons that they have now, which are cool too. It was the, you know, mechanical, spooky Cylon with the...
Yep.
Almost fake cut rate Darth Vader sound.
Yep.
Darth Vader.
Yep.
Darth Vader sound. You shat your pants a little bit.
A little bit.
So I guess it wasn't a total loss. I may not be able to flip through all of the old Mad magazines and the references to Adlai Stevenson,
mm-hmm,
which weren't even relevant.
That's right.
When I bought them.
Spiro Agnew.
Oh, boy.
They took him down a peg or two, didn't they?
They knocked the stuffing out of him.
And then they would show you the lighter side of gardening. Oh,
yeah.
Dave Berg. Oh, man. Dave Berg. He was on the edge.
Even though we can't flip through these magazines when you come over for the show tomorrow
yeah.
At the Barnes of Wolf Trap in Vienna, Virginia,
yep,
you said
yep,
discreetly. It is still chuffed up, not chuffed up, chalked up, dredged up all of these fresh memories.
Uh-huh.
So I guess a moldy Foot Locker is better than none at all.
So that's a bumper sticker right there.
There we go. That'll be the secret room if you get through all of the levels
of Spoon Flinger.
Spoon Flinger.
It'll just show you that message in the middle, yes, of the room.
Yeah, and now that you know what it is, there's no real incentive to play Spoon Flinger.
Very nice. I could go in one of two directions on this. I'll go in one quick direction, and then I'll go in the other more meaty direction, I think.
You're sort of doing the Statue of Liberty play on this one.
I totally am. I'm flea flickering.
Yeah.
The one direction I was going to say, I can't remember if we talked about this on a previous podcast, but if we did, I think it was long enough ago that it doesn't matter. You're mentioning of video game strategy guides and such.
Yeah.
Got me thinking, for no particular reason, obviously a particular reason, talking about video games, but it made me think about when I was, must have been 10, maybe 11. We're talking 1980 at the earliest. I don't remember when this game came out, and I'm too lazy to check it up.
So it was the Cylon era.
Yes, it was the Cylon era, and the Atari football arcade game came out.
Oh, the one with the trackball.
Yes, the one with the two trackballs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a tabletop type orientation, which I believe it may have been the first game to have that orientation. I don't know. First video game. What made me think about it was at the time, I mean, you can't even describe how cool this game seemed.
Sure. Yeah.
To people of our generation, if you look back on it now, it is thoroughly laughable because basically you could cycle between four different plays.
Yep.
And it was all literally X's and O's on a screen. And it mostly consisted of you frantically banging away at this trackball trying to outrun your opponent.
Yeah, just mashing your hands down on this table.
But the thing the visceral memory I have of that game is probably the first 4 or 5 months after it came out, I could never play it because whenever you went up to it, there was always a bunch of older kids with quarters lined up along it.
That's right. That was the game that the cool older kids wanted to play.
And at the time, they seemed like they were 30-year-old dudes. I'm sure they were like 15.
Oh, but they were wizened and tough.
They were, and they had all the money, and they had they must have had $3 in quarters lined up. So you knew you were never going to get on that game, and that game, whenever I see it or think of it, always fills me with a mixture of anticipation and disappointment. For that very reason, just that, I really want to play this game. Oh, I can't again. And then of course you got to play it, and you always kind of sucked at it because no one could be good at that game because it was not quite random, but it was so simple.
Yeah.
It was basically just whose hand is faster. But, and that sort of, I feel like an episode of The Wonder Years. And I learned something that day. Sometimes you've got to be careful what you wish for. And what you want, it might not be what you need.
From the same era, that game, like the one that the cooler, older kids hoarded, there are a couple of places we would play video games, one of which was, of course, the bowling alley.
Mm-hmm.
It was Asteroids when it came out, or when it came to the bowling alley.
Yep.
Could not get my little grubby fingers onto that, at least not when all of the kids were around, and that was the only time I was around. So I know what you feel, and maybe that's our question. And this, I think, applies to every era, although there hasn't been, arcades haven't been quite the deal that they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But sort of what was the forbidden game? And I say it that way because if you're from the arcade era, you'll relate in some fashion to the game that you could never get into either because of the older kids or you're just too intimidated by it. But maybe it could be because, your parents thought that that game was too violent for you to have on your console.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, you just you couldn't get it.
Yeah.
It cost too much.
Yep.
What was the game that you always wished that you could have played at the time and that, of course, now you've sought out and played and realized it sucks?
I used to get a little scared by Sinistar.
Sure.
Because it's a creepy game. It still is to this day a creepy game. It's awesome.
It's loud.
It is.
That's why it's scary.
I've never been particularly good at it, but I enjoy playing it. I don't know that I ever had a forbidden game.
Well, yours was the football.
Yeah, I suppose it was the football.
It's different reasons.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
This way everybody can sort of, have their forbidden moment.
Mm-hmm.
Their dilapidated moment. I just wanted to say dilapidated.
Sure. Well, I was going to, for another question, the other direction I was going to go off in was the topic of lost childhood treasures.
Yeah.
The cliche is always, of course, your baseball card collection that your mom threw out.
Yeah. Or comic book collection.
Or comic book collection.
Or baseball comic collection.
Yes. Comics about baseball. But, tell us about some of your, either you were an idiot and didn't save them, or you did save them and somehow lost them in a move. What was your possible retirement fund that you squandered?
Or the thing that you were so perspicacious to have remembered to or thought to keep in good condition. Maybe it did fund your college,
mm-hmm.
Or the what have you, because we want to know.
Yeah.
I want to take a Twitter suggestion.
Sure.
And this is from Betting on Alice. And she asks, and she kind of was almost apologizing for asking, but do you ever get tired of podcasting? And I say yes and no.
I was going to say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And she did say she enjoyed the podcast. So we don't think you're saying, you should really stop it.
Yeah.
No. We did not interpret it that way. Obviously not, because we're talking about it.
Yeah.
I will say, or go ahead, Paul. I brought it up, so you get to answer first.
It's an interesting situation because this really is just sort of a podcast for pleasure, so to speak. It's not,
yeah,
as opposed to something like, say, Leo Laporte's This Week in Tech or some, something where it's his job or it's someone's job to do this podcast.
Right. Like Chris Hardwick's Nerdist podcast where,
well, that's actually, he's just doing that for pleasure as well. Actually,
yeah,
he was
true.
Just talking about it, but you know what I mean? Like we're not under some obligation other than what we impose on ourselves. Like if we don't have a podcast during week X, it's not like we're losing money or what have you. So we do have that luxury of, usually the weeks where we don't have a podcast, I mean, sometimes it's because we're on the road or, stuff is going on and we just couldn't fit it into the schedule. But usually built into that is we'll just sort of feel like we don't have a whole lot to talk about. And rather than inflict, at least from my perspective, rather mm-hmm. than inflict a lackluster podcast on people, I'd rather give them a week off and hopefully we'll be re-energized for the second week, which usually is what happens.
Yeah, and we've used the Emily's, the sexy vampire chapters to kind of bridge things on some of those weeks when we just felt a little dray.
Mm-hmm. And every once in a while I'll think about it and I'll think, wow, what incredible presumption of us to say, here's us, we're going to sit here and just talk. Not about, what came out in the movies this week, not about the news, not about technology issues, not about, important matters. We're just going to chat about shit like video games and your moldy footlocker and put it out there and people will get to listen to it, so other people can listen to it.
In fact, we actively avoid being topical or relevant. I get that. I sort of feel the same thing. And it's funny. It's sort of like last week we were talking about the creative doldrums.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost the same thing, like those weeks when when there's nothing going on, or especially now where we don't have any gigs or anything obvious to talk about. It's like, sort of have to spool up the Tesla coils, you know, and hope that you get some static charge to at least make some crackling sounds.
Yep.
And I think we do a pretty fair job of it.
I'm happy with it. But in the short version, we occasionally get tired of podcasting, and usually in that case, we will not do a podcast at that particular time. Yep.
And honestly, the feedback we get about the podcast keeps me like really excited about it. Mm. Like when people do ask questions,
yep.
when we put the word out. And when we put up a question about, you know, hey, what do you think? We read that, you know, we really think it's cool that not just gratuitously to say something, but if what we're talking about really does sort of make people think or remember things or, you mm-hmm. know, or do things. So there you go, betting on Alice. Yeah. That was a good question.
The last thing I will say briefly here. Apropos of nothing other than looking at our Twitter feed, is one of our fans, Cupcake and Tea, suggested talking about Canada or poutine or Tim Hortons. The reason I mention this is because she was immediately retweeted by the Twitter poutine bot, which apparently retweets any tweet that has the word poutine in it.
I love that.
That is what makes me love the internet, is things like that.
Wow. God, that was early in the podcast where we talked about opening an American poutinery.
Yes.
I think Gravy Davies.
Was it Monkey Fries?
I think it was Gravy Davies Monkey Fries.
There you go.
Was going to be the whole product name.
Yeah.
I feel pretty good about where we've landed here.
Yeah, as do I. So let us talk about upcoming things. Tomorrow, which will be today probably by the time you actually listen to this, or yesterday or a week ago, we will be at the Barnes at Wolf Trap with the Bobs on Wednesday, April 28th. Our very good friends from our old acapella days, our good old acapella days.
Wow, makes it sound like we used to stand around in striped vests and skimmer hats.
That's exactly right. Or we hung out on the stoop. We hung out on the stoop with Sylvester Stallone's brother.
That's right.
Frank Stallone. May 6th, we are at the Swedish American Hall in San Francisco, California, with Adam Savage as our opening act. Yeah, how about them apples? May 7th, Woodstock, Seattle. May 8th, Woodstock, Portland. You know what Woodstock is by now if you don't go to our website. On the 11th, Tuesday, speaking of the Nerdist podcast, we will be at Largo in Los Angeles doing a live recording of the Nerdist podcast, a all musical feature with Mike Furman, who is also the firm of Hard and Firm, Chris Hardwick's duo, or their duo, his duo with Chris Hardwick, and also Tom Lennon of The State and Reno 911. And special musical guest we are not allowed to announce, but it is going to be frickin' awesome.
Yes, you will. I've said it before. You will shit your lungs out.
I know I'll be shitting my lungs out, which will be embarrassing.
I've already shat one of my lungs out.
Let's see, the 13th we're in Richmond at the Hat Factory, and the 14th we are at the Lincoln Theater in Raleigh, North Carolina, both of those shows with Colton. The 27th we're in Montreal, 28th we're in Ottawa, the 30th we are in Toronto.
Poutine.
Again with Colton. And then, of course, June 6th, we are in Chicago with Woodstock, and June 7th we are in Minneapolis with Woodstock.
Too much awesome.
And
secret stuff we can't tell you
about. There is secret stuff going on. There is the charity single, which we mentioned. Listen at rednosenet.com for it. We'll try and give people a heads up as to when they'll be playing it. We're still working on, I may put a poll up on this just to see. We're still working on trying to possibly do a Woodstock in San Diego at the around the time of Comic-Con. One of the complicating factors is Bare Naked Ladies are playing on Saturday night.
So
we're not doing Saturday night.
No.
And that's making it a little tougher, but we're still trying to make it happen. We'll see how that goes. But you can find all that information and other stuff at paulandstorm.com.
Especially, you can find out how to join the Brigade of Minions, and you can be a Switchblade Lothario.
Yes, you can.
But you cannot be I'm Storm.
But you can be I'm Paul.
And we've been talking about some stuff for 5 to 10 minutes.
On average. No static at all!
Go do things.